Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.
Off the Ball, GAA.
Well, we are talking about it, like, well, you're not talking about the incident, you're talking about the fact that, well, that out of 50 people, you're finger-pointing me, is that what you're saying?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.
Hello and welcome along to another episode of The Green Scene. We are live today, so if you are listening back to this, make sure you check in next week. We want to get all of your comments. This, of course, is a match week, believe it or not. I had to be reminded of that yesterday myself, and I am currently hosting a podcast talking about the Republic of Ireland. And I actually wasn't entirely sure that this game was on this weekend. This week caught me by surprise. Obviously, on Thursday night, we're taking on Qatar, and we've loads to get through because it's actually turned out to be a pretty exciting day. As far as news goes, we had updates obviously over the last couple of days about the squad for this game against Qatar and for our trip to Montreal in a couple of weeks' time. We also had news of some new deals around the coaching ticket that looks set to be announced over the course of this international window. And outside of that too, we had some League of Ireland action last night with some players who of course are going to be involved over the next couple of games. And we also had the FAI announce some new structures to how the underage setup and the coaching is going to be working as far as that is concerned over the next little while. There was also plenty of action over the course of the weekend as the EFL playoffs wrapped up and some good Irish success there. And as well as that, Brentford season came to an end. So Keith Andrews, we'll talk about that as the over the course of the next hour, really. I am joined, as you can see on your screens, if you are watching, by David Wilson, as always. How are you, Dave?
All good, Matthew. How are you?
Yeah, all good. Unfortunately, we're not joined by Ben Symes today, which is a shame, but he will be back. We can confirm he will be back. So all the best to Ben, wherever he's doing. I actually know what he's doing right now.
He's recovering. He's getting ready for a huge couple of days of Ireland-ness. Ireland are training today. Probably just finished training in the last kind of hour or so. Mm. And then they are doing some media tomorrow. So Ben will hopefully be back involved. And he'll be out doing some groundbreaking, hard-hitting journalism.
As he always does. As he always does. I think there's only really one place to start here, David. Of course, I mentioned some news about the coaching ticket and about some new deals coming our way. And David Snaid is reporting in 42 that over the course of this international window, we're going to have a contract extensions for both John O'Shea and Paddy McCarthy. So Hamer Hagrimsson, we know, is going to be here until at least the end of Euro 2028. So you would have to imagine that these coaching deals, these tickets, these extensions for these for Paddy McCarthy and John O'Shea will run to that duration as well. Positive news?
I think it's very positive news. And I think as well, Hamer Hagrimsson kind of said in the maybe the previous press conference that, you know, Paddy McCarthy, maybe it was back in when we were getting ready for Prague, which was Prague is 2 months ago tomorrow or Thursday.
Oh.
Which is
Does it feel like it's 2 months ago? Does it feel like it was a longer duration or shorter?
It feels longer, to be honest, just because of the emotional turmoil we were all in the aftermath, and it's still taking time to get over, and it'll only be harder to get over as well when you're watching Czechia in the World Cup against Mexico and South Korea and South Africa. But back on to Paddy McCarthy and John O'Shea, I think it is good news. It is definitely good news. The fact that Paddy McCarthy is such a highly rated coach by Oliver Glasner, who is obviously leaving Crystal Palace. They have Rayo Vallecano in a Europa Conference League final on Wednesday night. Paddy McCarthy has been kind of pivotal and central to everything good about Crystal Palace over the last couple of years, and he stepped in a couple of times as well to the main coaching position as well. And he seems to be really well liked by the players. He's done great work with Glasner. I suppose you might be thinking maybe Glasner, whoever he goes to next, we don't know. There's rumours of clubs in Germany and clubs in the Netherlands as well.
Mighty Follow.
And maybe Fulham, which is a bit of a...
No, sorry, I said Mighty Follow.
Oh, Mighty Follow. So yeah, well, true. But like that's the thing you're kind of worried about is that will Glasner take McCarthy and then could he do his international coaching commitments and his club commitments? But look, it looks like he could be staying at Palace anyway for another while. And John O'Shea as well, he's been kind of central as well. He really is Emerald Grimson's right-hand man.
Yeah.
He's been there for quite a while now, considering he was kind of obviously the interim manager between Kenny and Amorim.
Interim managers at Man United go hand in hand.
Between Kenny and him or Grimson. So.
Yeah.
So I think it's really positive news for the team. It's nice to have that continuity. And I was thinking about this.
The exact word I was going to jump in with there. Yeah.
I was just thinking about this for the last kind of maybe half an hour ago. We have an identity now. We have an identity in this team. And that is probably a credit to O'Shea, McCarthy, the rest of the coaching staff, and Hal Grimson as well.
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think for sure. And the John O'Shea thing is interesting as well, because in that period where he was the interim, which was quite a long time, which is easy to forget how long that period.
140 days or something.
Yeah, probably more. Yeah. I wouldn't say there was angst towards John O'Shea, but people weren't totally sold by him. There wasn't complete buy-in, especially around talk of him getting the job on a full-time basis and all that sort of stuff. And even in the beginning, and actually even more recently as well, when he stepped in to do the kind of press duty, the press conferences ahead of big games, when Hamer hasn't been doing it, and there's no real reason as to why that is. That's just how it's been, where we have an acceptance. And I'm not sure that's a thing that is seen regularly in other countries, where before games the assistant manager will be the one taking the press conference. But
you don't see Anthony Barry doing Thomas Tuchel's press
conference. No, you don't. And I'm still not sure if people are 100% on board with that either. I mean, I personally would obviously like to hear from the man who we're led to believe is making the decisions. But at the same time, Hamer Hallgrimsson comes from a history, I suppose, of working in a duo.
Yeah.
And I imagine he's leaned pretty heavily, and he said this himself, on John O'Shea and the likes of Paddy McCarthy as well when he's first come in. And funnily enough, despite the big gap that we had between our last two permanent managers, there wasn't that much of a turnaround from when Hamer Hallgrimsson came in to when he actually had to take his first game. So having someone there, as you mentioned, continuity, like John O'Shea, who knows the players, which can work one of two ways, but I think we've seen over the course of the last 8 months, let's say, that it's been a positive. And I'm not surprised that the two deals have been signed, but there was little things there kind of suggesting that it might not be straightforward. But the fact that it seems to be done, I think, is only a good thing.
I think the only thing that you'd nearly worry from a player's or fan's perspective is that John O'Shea and Paddy McCarthy are very well entitled to think they could be the head coach of a club somewhere.
Yeah.
And that could be in England or the UK, or it could be in the League of Ireland or somewhere that, you know, they might have ambitions to be a head coach somewhere. So
yeah,
that was on your mind. And also, like, John O'Shea is an Ireland playing legend.
He is.
And to have someone of his, like, multiple Premier League winner, Champions League winner, I think that experience still always counts for something, no matter how long ago that was. Mm. Like, it's still, you want John O'Shea on your side for big games.
It absolutely would hold weight with the players, I imagine, too, especially this younger crop of lads as well. And the familiarity as well is not a bad thing when it comes to international football.
Yeah.
Because,
but I suppose the biggest compliment I can pay to them is that there's an identity with the Irish team. Yeah. We know relatively what we're going to be doing, how we're setting up. We know back three generally. We know how we'll play against the ball, how we play with the ball. I think that's a real positive thing from the coach staff. And it seems quite a collaborative
effort,
process as well, which I think is the way of the modern world.
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
Yeah.
Very well put. We are going to have a game this Thursday, and the team is probably not going to look all that familiar or have a sense of continuity. It might look a little bit more familiar than the team we put out against Grenada over in Murcia a couple of weeks ago. Last week on the Green Scene, we did go through the Republic of Ireland squad that had been announced for these two games, and it was a little bit odd because certain players were only available for the game against Qatar, and certain players are only available for the game against Canada, some of which were obviously available for both. Before I go through the updated squad that we have, obviously off the back of a couple of withdrawals, I should remind you that the Green Scene on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football team. So, as far as the squad is concerned, injuries have ruled out both Alan Brown and Alex Gilbert, obviously both players playing for Middlesbrough, who had that fairly heartbreaking loss in the playoff final, probably the third time they've thrown away promotion this season. We'll come back to that a little bit later on, because everyone's loving a bit of John Egan at the moment. And then Southampton pair Finn Azaz and Ryan Manning have also been forced to withdraw. We don't know the reasons for that. You would have to assume
injuries,
it is injury related. And then, unfortunately, Strasbourg defender Andrew Omobamadele will also miss out on this window through injury. So again, an international window comes around and poor old Andrew picks up yet another injury, as it seemed as though he might have been just coming off the back of those layoffs that he had been suffering. Disappointing for him before we go through the rest.
Yeah, it's disappointing for him, but I will say he needs to look after himself and his body. And
absolutely, if anyone does.
Yeah, because look, ultimately these are friendlies and it's a good chance to meet up with the players and squad and to work on different things out of the Nations League in the autumn. But if Omobamadele comes back to Strasbourg and has a good pre-season and starts the season well in France, then he'll definitely be in the squad come the autumn. So he just needs to stay fit and kind of look after himself. And I think that's a positive thing, probably long term.
So that's five withdrawals there. Brown, Gilbert, Omobamadele, Azaz and Manning. And then for the Qatar game, the following players have been called up. So Dara O'Shea, obviously, was not named in his squad initially for whatever reason, but he will be there. And Jack Moylan as well, after his stellar performance against Grenada. They will both be available for the Qatar game, as well as Quivín Kelleher, which we already knew, I believe. He was only going to be there for the Qatar game and not heading to Montreal. And then for Canada only, Charlton midfielder Connor Coventry and Bohemians midfielder Dawson Devoy will link up with the squad later this week, specifically for the trip to Canada. And then for both fixtures, two further call-ups, Jamie McGrath of Hibernian and Killian Phillips of St Mirren. So they'll be there for the duration of the window. And then as well as that, in addition to it, Hibernian striker Owen Elding will also remain with the squad for training purposes throughout the window. Elding will integrate with the senior environment while the final stages, how many times have we heard that, of his citizenship process is completed. Now, before we dive into anything else, I do want to ask you a question. So we've seen two midfielders, Jim McGrath probably more of an attacker than a midfielder, but nonetheless, St Mirren's Killian Phillips has been called up. Now, a St Mirren teammate of Killian Phillips this season is Jacob Devaney, and we've spoken about Jacob Devaney before, obviously an underage captain of Manchester United before he went out on loan for a taste of senior football with St Mirren. He's been playing pretty well. Form for St Mirren hasn't been that great, but he'll be heading back to Manchester United, obviously, now. Are you surprised not to see him included, especially with the nature of the players dropping out and us calling up some others?
I am a little surprised that he's not in it. I don't know, like, maybe sometimes there's a thought process behind having maybe too many young players and you want to kind of integrate them nicely between the senior players and the players that are coming through. Did he play last night for St Mirren in their relegation playoff?
I'm sure, good question.
I was literally just about to check that. But look, he's shown like he's ready to play senior football, especially at club level. And he's probably a little bit behind maybe the likes of Dawson Devoy because he's just less experienced. But his ceiling seems pretty high.
He did play in midfield with Killian Phillips.
Yeah, so the fact that he did play last night, maybe you're kind of questioning maybe why hasn't he been called up. But look, there will still be opportunities for him.
Yeah.
And we kind of, as Ireland fans, which is no problem either to think like this, but because he was born in England,
yeah,
we do have this, you know, previous trauma of like Declan Rice, Jack Grealish. Look, I'm not saying he's the level of those players at all. Maybe he has the potential to be, to be of that level. Let's hope. But yeah, I think there will be times for him to come in the future in a green shirt. But like the players that we have there, you know, it's interesting. Killian Phillips is back in the squad. The last time I remember him being in a squad was the Armenia away game.
Yeah, you were there.
I was there, and he struggled a lot. Like, and we all struggled in the heat.
Yeah,
and
for
in
sure.
Those conditions.
He'd say that himself too.
Yeah, but he has shown that playing for Ireland means everything to him, and I think he will absolutely attack this camp.
Yeah,
with everything. You think, okay, he's just played a long season with St Mirren. He's won the Scottish League Cup. So he'd be playing maybe European football in the summer. They've just, St Mirren stayed up by the skin of their teeth, I suppose, last night against Partick Thistle in a Scottish Premiership.
They did.
So you're thinking, God, he's had a long year, played a lot of games, but I don't think he'd even be thinking about that one little bit. He'd be thinking, I cannot wait to get into this Ireland squad and just show Hogrimson and the rest of the coaching staff what he's all about. So I think that's an interesting one as well for him.
Yeah, and obviously just on the, I would agree. I'd agree with the Killian Phillips point for sure. I just think on the Jacob Devaney thing, I think these are the squads where you do bring these type of guys in.
Yeah.
And we have done it. We have brought a couple of guys in of that ilk. So I wouldn't be, not concerned is the wrong word, but I just a little bit surprised. He's one of the players I would have assumed would have managed to find his way in The squad for one of the games, whether it be Canada or it be...
There's still time, like, there's still... Yeah, there's still...
Yeah, a lot can happen, to be fair. The Canada game, not for another little while.
Yeah.
Or a couple of other players, obviously, as you mentioned, Dawson Devoy is there. Adam Brennan, obviously, is included in the squad. Ed McGinty and Conor Brann as well, obviously, from the League of Ireland. We did have a League of Ireland match on last night. We saw Dawson Devoy in action. We also saw Ed McGinty in action. What are your thoughts on all of this? What's actually going to happen? Adam Brennan wasn't involved. Conor Brann, I believe, did play for Cork over the weekend, so...
Yeah, he did play last night against Tralee.
Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, we obviously had the news kind of early-ish last week that Alan Reynolds is going to keep Dawson Devoy for the games against Shamrock Rovers and Sligo Rovers on Friday night. Bohemians are in a position where they need all their best players at all times, especially their captain. Shamrock Rovers have a wealth of players, and don't get me wrong, Ed McGinty and Adam Brennan are as important to Stephen Bradley and that team as well. But they do have players who can step in probably more readily available than what Bohemians have. Like, everyone says Shamrock Rovers have two 11s that can win the league, and that's true.
Yeah.
Now, McGinty obviously played last night against Bohemians. Not to risk the wrath of all the goalkeepers and...
The goalkeepers' union.
The goalkeepers' union, but like... McGinty could play in that game, and he could play in that game Thursday night again, no problem. Like,
and then head over to the camp. Yeah,
yeah, of course he could. Now, the rumour was that maybe they might bring Alex Noonan into the game last night for Rovers, and we've obviously seen how impressive he was for the Ireland under-17s in the World Cup last year. And we should actually touch on the under-17 World Cup draw for this summer as well. But they obviously decided not to do that, but Adam Brennan did join up with the group, and like, Adam Brennan's only 19. It's different when you're an outfield player as well. Like, this is such an experience to go and get. Interestingly, that he wasn't used last night by Stephen Bradley. But Adam Brennan is a player, if he develops into what the player that we think he could develop into, will be a serious asset for Ireland. Just the way he plays out wide, like, plays a lot of time in a back five as well, as in one of the wing backs or as a winger, can probably play as like maybe one of the more advanced players too, and has a bit of like X factor as well about him. He can kind of go off both feet, very balanced, extremely quick, and an exciting player to get into the squad.
He's also quite raw still. I think we've seen flashes of brilliance. We've seen flashes of maybe naivety might be a little bit harsh, but he's still, the way I would view that is he's incredibly moldable.
Yeah.
And he can be whatever we want him to be. And listen, we don't know how good he even is. You know, he's playing at a level that we haven't trusted in the past as far as the national team goes. But no better man to go and kind of, again, as you say, it's so important to just go and impress the likes of Hamer Hagrinson, John O'Shea and Paddy McCarthy. And as well as that, like, if he gets involved with the 21 squads and with Jim Crawford and whatever, that sort of stuff as well is very important.
Like, a year ago he was playing the first division.
Yeah.
So
UCD,
like, it's what a kind of rise that
that's
is.
That's amazing,
like,
for that.
And we do see that, like, from time to time. We just see players just kind of go on these unbelievable, you know, kind of rises where out of nowhere they're playing like at a really high level. Thing for him is he probably needs someone to get into the Rovers team consistently, and we've seen that with Victor Ojemvuna, who I would have liked to seen in the squad, this squad in particular. But Ojemvuna came on and made his debut against Bowes back in the Aviva early in the first game of the season last year, and he looked excellent. And you're thinking, right, he's going to be used now throughout the rest of the season, and he wasn't really, like, he was in and out, and he didn't play for a while, and it's only this season where we see him, we're like, wow,
yeah. And to be fair, when you say this season, the last couple of months, maybe the last month or so, the last 6-8 weeks, he's really, really shown what he's all about. Because even at the start of the season, there was little moments where he still looks a little bit undercooked, a little bit light, some of his passing's a little bit off, but really the last 2 months or so, he's been brilliant.
Like, I know Shamrock Rovers lost the game up in Derry City and in Celtic Park, and don't get me wrong, the pitch wasn't great, but I was at that game, and you're just looking at Ojemvuna, and... this is the same said about him even in another loss against Dundalk a few weeks ago, that he is like levels
above,
like, he's so balanced left and right foot. He's a really exciting player. We don't even know what even his best position
that's
is.
That's what I'm saying. It's the same with a lot of these guys,
and he's going to Arsenal, who could be European and Premier League champions
by
the end of the week. He's going to the end of this season. But look, he's not in the squad. Like, and if Adam Brennan can follow a similar, maybe he doesn't have the same talent as, or the same skill set as what Ojemvuna has now, but if he can follow this similar trajectory, then it's a really exciting time, even though Ojemvuna is younger than Adam Brennan. But yeah, interesting. Conor Brann as well, a goalkeeper at Cork City, and if he plays, he'll be the first League of Ireland goalkeeper to play for Ireland since 1971. It was a 6-0 loss to Austria.
So is Ed McGinty going to be part of the squad?
Yeah, Ed McGinty is.
So it'll be the same for him then, right?
Yeah, same for him. So if either of them play, it's pretty mad. It'd be interesting to see what the thoughts are picking Conor Brann. Like,
yeah, it is wild. Isn't
first
it? We shouldn't
goalkeeper.
Rush over that. It is. Yeah, it's a weird one.
Cork City are 12 points clear, but I don't. Yeah, like I haven't looked. To be honest, I can't lie and say that I have watched much of Cork City this year. But I wouldn't imagine he's getting a whole lot of action.
No, he's not having a whole lot to do, maybe, no.
No.
I'd be interested. Yeah, I'd be intrigued to know if there are any Cork City fans tuning in now. Be sure to let us know what exactly it is about Conor Brann that you think him or Algrim's in a scene.
Yeah. But like, I think it's great, though, like, for... Yeah, it's a pity, maybe, on Thursday that the fans that will be here in the Aviva won't get to see the likes of maybe Dawson Devoy play or, maybe, I don't know, maybe Ed McGinty. Like, Dawson Devoy would be the one that I'd love to see play because he plays here every week.
Yeah.
And to see him play for the Irish team at senior level would be unbelievable. Also, like Mason Mealy, I think is so exciting to see
it's
him
cool,
part of it as well.
That is cool, for sure, absolutely. Very quickly, you mentioned there the game on Thursday before we move off that because there's loads of other stuff to get to as well. Tickets for the game on Thursday night, £40. What do you reckon? Is that alright? I know it's the norm, but is it a bit much considering what we're going to be getting?
Yeah, look, everything is expensive. In this city in particular, we know that. Like,
yes, it is.
£40 to take someone, to take someone to an Ireland game against a team, Qatar, that are going to the World Cup. But how many Qatari players can you name? Like, I couldn't name any. Until I looked at the squad there.
More about us, but
yeah, true. But yeah, then again, you look at the GA tickets this year. They've been all similar priced, and. You know, that's essentially an amateur sport. It's not the worst price. People are paying £100 for a friendly between Man United and Leeds in August,
True.
So, like, these players are still the creme de la creme. They're the
Absolutely.
Best players in the country.
No, of course.
And the levels...
I would be saying the same thing if it was going to be the 11 that started in Prague.
Yeah.
No, it's not nothing to do with the players at all. It's the
he's
getting to watch your country play. I always think with this sort of stuff, this is not an FAI specific thing or a football specific thing. If you have a stadium that is not going to sell out at that price range, it's probably not going to sell out regardless of the price range. If you're going to sell, maybe how much would you expect to be at this game? 20,000?
Did
you get that money?
No, like it seems like, and this is noticed after Prague, and it was remarked upon before Prague as well, and kind of after Budapest, that the Irish public and the Irish football team are kind of rowing in behind each other at the minute.
Sure.
And I think that also stems back from the Stephen Kenny days, because it got really poisonous and toxic. Maybe let's say towards the end of the Martin O'Neill era, and then into the Mick McCarthy era, it was a bit stodgy. And then obviously we had COVID, and then all of a sudden Stephen Kenny's here.
I will say, though, to be fair, and this is not to take away from Stephen Kenny in any way, shape, or form, but there was no buy-in at the end of Stephen Kenny, I don't think.
I would think there was a little bit. I think to most people it ran its course. But there was still a lot of...
It definitely ran its course,
Yeah, but there was a lot of believers out there, a lot of League of Ireland people... me included, who was like, oh, maybe just get, just one more campaign. Maybe let's just see. Like, because he was left with a difficult job. And like,
we'll get
pelters in here because we were called Kenny FM for a long time.
Well, before my time.
I remember when he was appointed, like it was unbelievable.
Of course, yeah.
Coup for the League of Ireland that a manager in the league had got the biggest job in Irish football, the biggest job in Irish sport. And now all of a sudden now we're picking players in the League of Ireland, and like the league has gone on leaps and bounds without real, it's been done organically.
Organically, exactly.
Like the League of Ireland fans and would be thinking about their teams on Friday night. So whether they kind of come to the Aviva and do two nights in a row watching football, I don't know.
Yeah, especially if the weather keeps up as well. That is a jokey sort of thing to say. But if the weather's nice, people will just day trip out for the game. Like if they're not that much on Thursday night. With the price point at €40, I'm thinking if you're going to sell just as an easy number to use, 20,000 tickets. If you dropped it to £25, £20, would you maybe sell 40,000 tickets. I don't know. Maybe you wouldn't, but I always think with that sort of stuff, and it goes across the board, where if you know you're not going to sell somewhere out, why not drop it and try and sell a few more tickets? It looks good for you too.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's
people like, it's mad. Like, you see, especially when if I'm going back to Monaghan after a game, there's always buses from Derry and Belfast, always buses from Donegal, and they'll go to all the games, you know, the North Macedonias, the Qatar friendlies. So it's just a thing that people do, and they just kind of plan their weeks or their trips and their trips to Dublin around it.
Yeah, well, we'll be keeping a keen eye on that anyway, and we'll be back next week at some stage to go through how all of that went. But as you mentioned about Stephen Kenny and how great it was for League of Ireland coaches, a League of Ireland coach to be managing the Republic of Ireland, we have some more coaching news. The FAI have kind of announced a new sort of structure as far as how the underage setup going. I'm going to read you a little bit of the statement here, and we can kind of discuss what it all actually means after that. So the FAI has confirmed a new full-time international coaching structure that will strengthen the development and level of support provided across Ireland's underage international pathway. And that's what they intended to do anyway. The innovative model will see 5 full-time international lead coaches. Some familiar names in here: Noel Hunt, Chelsea Noonan, John Cotter, Keith O'Halloran and James Scott, who are going to work alongside 4 full-time international coaches in Conor McCormack, Graeme Gartland, Mark Connors and Richie Smith across all teams from under 15 up to under 19 level. And they conclude this post by saying that the structure has been designed to transition away from a traditional age group model and instead create a more connected coaching team working across development phases, supporting player development and ensuring greater alignment throughout the pathway. Now, we've got a couple of additional comments from the FAI Director of Football, John Martin, who said that this new coaching structure is about creating greater alignment, consistency and connection across our international pathway. We want our young players to experience a clear identity and level of support throughout their journey with our national teams, regardless of the age group. And then FAI Technical Director Shane Robinson went on to say that the introduction of the new coaching structure is an important step forward for our international pathway and reflects the direction we want to take as an association. We wanted to build a full-time coaching structure that is more connected, collaborative and aligned across the pathway. So echoing similar sentiments there, both John Martin and Shane Robinson. So the main takeaways there is the fact that this is going to be you're moving away from your under 16, under 17, under 18, under 19, which of course will still exist to a degree, but you're kind of making sure that all of these players are being told the same things from a younger age, so that by the time they reach, ideally, the senior setup and the under 21 setup, they've got a clear vision of what the Republic of Ireland national team wants to be and should be and is going to be, by the sounds of what we're reading here.
Yeah, it seems like, again, like a more collaborative process, and that's kind of the theme of this podcast, is more collaborative.
Unintentionally.
Yeah. It's interesting, like, I think in the late 90s, England kind of rethought about all how they do their coaching, you know, their underage coaching and how to kind of produce the best players. They used to, you know, back in the day, like Jamie Carragher, Michael Owen, goes to like Lillishall, and then the elite players would literally train the elite players. In France, and the same with Clairefontaine, and they've kind of gone to a more regionalised way of going about things now. It's interesting, like, again, not to bring it back to Stephen Kenny all the time, but when he became under 21 manager, he made like a very concerted effort to basically group all the best players, no matter what age they were, at the one level. And now, this is now more to do with his under 21 team, and we were talking about this morning actually, about Troy Parrott, about how he was 17 and he was playing for that under 21 team, scored a brilliant goal against Sweden a few years ago. Yeah. And like Zach Albuzetti is also in that team, but he was, I think, 22 at the time maybe. We kind of grouping all our best talent maybe together, and we having a real go at it, like, let's say, at under 17 level, under 19 level, and then the 16 and 18 teams are maybe more developmental. Maybe that's some of the thinking behind it. But having more people involved, and also, you know, you're going to have more opinions and maybe more strong personalities and more kind of characters. But I think it is a good thing. The people that are involved are incredibly well researched in how their footballing education has been. Like, you've got like Noel Hunt, who obviously played a lot over in the UK. Graeme Gartland, who we know very well from in here, and obviously he works here on Football Saturday, does some commentaries. But the one thing about Graeme Gartland, and this is not just because of he's in here all the time, or when he's commenting on a game, you always learn something. Yeah. He always teaches you something about the game. Like, he was brilliant on the under-17 commentaries in RTE last year.
He's thoughtful.
Him and Cavallini, and also he knew obviously a lot of the players because he'd worked obviously Shamrock Rovers in underage capacity. But I think having someone like him who understands the game from all facets, from, you know, playing over in Scotland as well for years and years, and also playing in the League of Ireland coaching here, I think someone at his skill set is an unbelievable asset to the FEI. And it's really good that the FEI are trying to bring all these people together and use this wealth of experience and knowledge and brains. And this is something that Jer would be on about in the morning show,
loads, yeah,
that we don't
Darren
do enough
O'Dea,
of.
Spoken to that with Darren O'Dea on a couple of weeks ago, and it was the same thing about, have you spoken to? And he was like, well, I've had little bits here or there, but like, talk to me. I want to give you my knowledge, you know, without saying it, because that sounds like a very kind of cocky, for want of a better word, thing to say, like, oh, I know all this stuff, let me tell you. But like, it is the reality of it. And when you mentioned about Graeme Gartland there and what he has to offer, we've obviously heard him tell loads of different stories about the different things he's been through in his career and being over in England and things not working out for him, and in different kind of areas, you know, obviously stuff did work out for him at different points, but I think he was at Barnsley he was at or something, and I remember him getting released and the kind of brutal nature of it, and that's something that was invaluable. It's easy to tell a young lad who's going abroad that this might happen, but when you have someone who's actually experienced it, and knowing that, you know, football is not a linear business, and that's something you might come back to in a couple of moments. But I think you're right in what you say. The people that are involved in this are it's promising. You never want to get too kind of excited by this sort of stuff. And the thing with it is as well, is it's one of these things that we look back on retrospectively, maybe in 10 years' time.
This is a great move.
When good stuff starts happening.
Hopefully.
And it could well end up being something in 10 years' time that we totally forget about, you know?
Yeah.
And hopefully it's not. But maybe if it works out well, it might be something we forget about, you know? But it's an interesting development, and it's good to see that something has happened,
yeah,
you know?
There's a structure there, and then hopefully these people...
And there's intent behind it.
Yeah, and there's like a clear philosophy and, you know, a way of doing things. Like, don't get me wrong, I don't think John Martin is going to be like, right, we're going to play like Barcelona in 2010, and we're going to, you know, we're going to play...
I'd hope not.
La Masia-style football, and, you know, that's the way we're going to... It looks like we're going to have, like, some sort of idea of what Irish football is all about. And it's something like when Jack Charlton came in at the time, and his famous Desert Island discs interviews, like, you know, we want a team that kind of reflects the thoughts of what Irish people are like. And I think that's only a good thing, because the countries that are successful have a clear identity, and it doesn't have to be the Spanish one where you keep ball possession, or it doesn't have to be the Italian one of like kind of passion and Catenaccio kind of style football of Arrigo Sacchi or whatever it is. And, you know, Brazil are having an identity crisis right now. If we're going to look ahead to the World Cup, and they've got Carlo Ancelotti, a European coach, and they're going to kind of hope that his personality, nearly more than anything else, rather than his tactical acumen, is going to be the thing that gets Brazil over the line in the World Cup. And we've seen in 2018, like that end when Messi retired after the 16 or 17 Copa America. Argentina were kind of a basket case. The 2018 World Cup was a joke. When they had Sampaoli in charge, and then they get, all of a sudden they land on Lionel Scaloni, and Scaloni becomes this, you know, the Scalanetta kind of style football, which is, you know, building a team around, like, you know, the greatest player of all time. And they've kind of embraced that Argentinian identity. And I remember actually reading about Pablo Aimar is a coach at Argentina, and he was asked about like what brought all the Argentinian players together for the 2022 World Cup, and he was like, you know, one asado is worth more than 20 video calls, you know. One group kind of group meeting, group celebration is worth more than kind of just getting to know people across, you know, over the phone and different things, and that kind of that like connection and closeness brought that Argentinian team together and obviously won the World Cup. But what is that now? What can we do that now from an Irish perspective? And how can we bring these people from different backgrounds, different parts of the country, born in different countries as well? How do we kind of bring all that together at an underage setup and then kind of produce the best talents for the senior team? So I think it's a really interesting time for the development of Irish football. And of course, it's going to be, you know, dissenting voices, and people are obviously not going to go along. That's just Irish football. But like, let's give this a chance and see how it goes.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and we will be keeping an eye on that for sure. Another thing, we're going to keep an eye on a lot of stuff. I can't believe how much news there actually has been today.
Yeah, there has been.
There has been quite a lot going on. And of course, last night, As we mentioned, League of Ireland game between Shamrock Rovers and Bohemians was taking place in Dalymount. Troy Parrott and Jacob Ryan were in attendance.
Yeah.
And we spoke about paths not being linear for players. Troy Parrott is, finds himself at the... And Jacob Ryan as well, to be fair, has had a bit of a mad career himself. Yeah. But, you know, you talk about players going to England now, and back when Troy Parrott was heading over, it was a different time.
Yeah.
It could go a lot younger than he can now. Obviously, he had a couple of unsuccessful loans, and then... Mm-hmm. Seems to have figured it out, but we don't know.
So.
Yeah, we don't know what his next step is. We're very excited about something that's coming up across the Off the Ball socials, across the Off the Ball pages the next few days.
Yeah,
Involving Troy Parrott, and you're going to get to hear all about that story.
Yeah, you are. I just thought interestingly last night, Troy Parrott is the only Shamrock Rovers fan that'd be received warmly well in the Bohemians end at Dalymount Park. but yeah, no, Troy Parrott has done. His first sit-down interview, really, since really Budapest, and you know, the highs of Budapest and the highs of winning that game against Portugal in Dublin, and then obviously the lows of Prague. But obviously there were some highs there too before we ultimately give away the 2-0 lead. But yeah, Parrott has done a few with Owen Sheehan. It'll be out on
more than an interview, I would say.
Yeah, it's a documentary, really.
Yeah.
And I've listened to it. It's excellent. It'll be on your podcast platform. It'll also be on YouTube, the full thing. You'll be able to access the whole thing.
You've got more power than me. I haven't managed to listen to it yet. Sell it to me there. Sell it to me.
I don't want to give too much away because listen to the whole thing, but
yeah.
He mentions a really interesting part about his loan moves and how they didn't really work out.
And I brought that up initially when we started talking about Troy here without the knowledge of that. And it's something that I'm endlessly fascinated about, young players going down. And you hear so many players, and I don't know what he said about it, and don't tell us what he said about it because we want to find that out ourselves. But a lot of players go on these loan moves and speak about the benefits it had of them, it gave them, you know, especially players who've come from these Cat 1 academies over in England, and they go and they spend a season on loan down in League 1 or League 2, or if they're lucky enough, the Championship, and about, you know, having to fend for themselves for the first time. And I'm not sure if that would have been the same for him. Obviously, a little bit different when he's coming over from Ireland, but he went over so young. It probably was the case.
Yeah. Like he obviously had the low moves like to Preston, to Millwall.
MK Dons.
And MK Dons is the one that really kind of...
Yeah, was a success.
Yeah, kind of swung things around. But interestingly, his mum is also interviewed in the documentary, and she kind of mentions about how she decided to go over and kind of... you know, maybe be that support from, because the thing about Parrott and his family is that they're all extremely close, and all the his friends around him from, you know, North Dublin as well are all extremely, you know, important to him. And that comes across very much so in the documentary. But interestingly about his loan moves, he just kind of speaks about what the reasons were to move to certain clubs. And then obviously when the move came to Excelsior, he actually didn't really know much about Excelsior. He knew they were a team in the Netherlands, but that move happens, and then he kind of...
Here we are,
and he gets... he kind of finds his groove, the style of football, and also his confidence. Like, he's still only 24. Like, if I was moving to Millwall or to Preston or whatever at 18, 19, and I had this pressure on me that you're the next Robbie Keane or whatever... Like, there's no way I would have folded. Like, I would have just been psychologically, I just wouldn't have been able to handle it. Like, there's just no way I'd be able to do that.
Yeah.
Like, to have that mental resilience to show that he can always come back from lows, I guess, that you can always kind of, there's always the next thing, you can always bounce back. Like, it's a pretty remarkable journey, and fair play to Owen and Mick McCarthy and to Brona and to Keane, who put it all together as well, because it's a really special piece that we'll have on Off the Ball this week.
And the best part about it as well, for me anyway, is that you're getting to hear from someone who's, we talk about how incredible the journey is, the journey that's only starting.
Yeah.
And we're getting to hear about that now.
Yeah.
Usually you hear, you know, whenever you see a documentary, you know, it was the same thing came around when the Vinicius Jr. thing came around a little while ago, and it wasn't a brilliant piece, but it was just interesting to hear from a player when they're in the middle of their career. Usually you hear about people talking retrospectively about, oh yeah, I remember this happened when this happened, or I remember doing this when I heard this, but we're actually in the middle of a career, so it's brilliant. And we talk about it enough, but make sure you go and check it out, and we'll chat about it again next week. Absolutely, just we're running a little bit short on time here, but we've just got a couple more things to to touch on, I suppose. Plenty of success at the weekend in the playoffs. Loads of Irish players going to be playing in different divisions next year. Well, they're going to be playing for clubs who are going to be in different divisions next year. Whether they're actually there or not, in a couple of cases, will be interesting to see. Obviously, in League One, Cyrus Christie, Jack Bonham and Johnny Kenny managed to get promoted with Bolton. Will they sign Johnny Kenny on a permanent? He is injured at the moment. I imagine they probably will. The fans definitely want him. I don't think Celtic will be too, you know,
not going to stand in his way, are they?
No, I don't think they're going to stand in his way. No, they'll drive a hard bargain, I'd say, because he's played so well for them over the course of the last couple of months. But yeah. I imagine he'll be on the move there in the Championship. John Egan, Cathal McCarthy played a couple of games. Was he former UCD man earlier on during the season? Hasn't been in the mix all that much. Did play against Chelsea in the Cup, which I'm sure was a great moment for him. But John Egan's been right at the heart of it. And, yeah, brilliant story, and great to see John Egan get another. I think that's his third promotion to the Premier League now, too, with Sheffield United. So,
yeah,
in the twilight of his career, really, as well, to be fair. And he's had some influence on the Ireland squad, too. I mean, Seamus Coleman, we know obviously the influence he had on the pitch as well as off it. But John Egan came back in around the same time as him, and I imagine a lot of players within the squad would credit John Egan in the same way they do Seamus Coleman. That's just an assumption. I haven't heard that, but I would imagine it's the case. Before we might come back to John Egan for a couple of minutes in a moment. But yesterday, obviously, with the League Two playoff final as well. And you know me, I like to talk about the guys right down the bottom of the English football pyramid. And Conor Grant picked up a nice assist actually for the third goal, as Notts County did one for the people and kept Salford down in Division Two or League Two for another year.
Yeah.
It's also Luke Brown as well, former Shells man, who was at Palace. I think he was underage captain of Palace. He's also at Notts County. He wasn't playing yesterday, but he's at the club. And I should mention David Harrington as well. Obviously, he still hasn't made that appearance for Wales, but he was a goalkeeper, and he's at Bolton as well.
Yeah.
So they got promoted. So
yeah,
lots of joy all around there. But John Egan, yeah.
Yeah, it's and what a credit he is to himself and his family and everyone else connected with him. Like, he's had some horrific injuries and a horrific luck at times as well with injuries, and bounce back again, every single time. Yeah. Like, when he was going to Hull initially, they were like, oh, that's probably the start of him stepping down. I think he might have signed injured in
January.
Yeah.
And they were in a relegation scrap.
Yeah, they took a bit of a punt on him and he didn't really get into the team. And then he got into the team, all of a sudden they stayed up. And then you go into this season and they have a manager called Sergei Yakirovich,
who is an absolute character.
Yeah, who will probably, I don't know, he'll definitely bring a lot of crack to the Premier League next season.
I know he's very much like, there's a chronically online kind of thing to be bringing up, but I cannot wait to see what sort of team they put out in the opening day next season. Because they are under this weird sort of transfer embargo type situation. I don't know the ins and outs of it, because their owner is, again, another character. People will remember him taking shells and trying to get rid of Damien Duff and eventually leaving.
Yeah.
Bizarre stuff. But he's spoken about them, we're going to spend money, we're going to spend money. But of course, this year they built this entire team without spending any money, because they spent too much money beforehand. And he's going with Ollie McBurney, watching Las Palmas and cheering on all the other teams, hoping they got relegated, because if Las Palmas were to get relegated, Ollie McBurney would be available on a free and they would be able to sign him. And he obviously went on then to be the man that spearheaded the attack that eventually got them promoted to the Premier League. But obviously back to John Egan, Yakirovich actually spoke at various different points in the season about John Egan, because there was links to West Ham, I remember, in January towards the window. I know he gets linked to West Ham a lot because I think he was there very early on and trials and all that sort of stuff. But Yakirovich basically said, if you'd said to me at the start of the season that John Egan was going to be a key part of success, any success we have this season, I probably would have laughed at you, essentially, not putting words in his mouth. But that was the sentiment of it. And I mean, coming to the end of the season there, John Egan was one of the most valuable players in the squad. Now, they do have some good young players too, don't get me wrong. He's not like he's been the difference between going up and not, but he might have been. Yeah. He could well have been.
You know? Like, you need an experienced old head at centre back as well, the position. Yeah. And I remember even the first 20 minutes, Middlesbrough on top.
Yeah.
There's a ball that went across the near post 6 yard box. He got across, made a great block. Like, those unseen things that John Egan just does and does a great job of is why Hull are in the position they're in. And as well, they finished sixth in the Championship. They had a goal difference of +4. They're going to have to improve a lot next season.
Yeah. All you XG nuts out there will, I'm sure, be aware that they were relegated.
Yeah, relegated on the XG table.
On the XG table that everyone really cares about and matters loads. Yeah. Same with Sunderland.
Yeah.
They should have been relegated, but now find themselves in the Europa League. Yeah. So let's see if it all balances itself out next season.
Yeah, but Sunderland are like the example to follow, but they spent like 130 million or something during the summer last year.
Hull are going to do some mad stuff.
Like, can Hull spend the same money? Like, they're going to try to.
I'm sure they will. But, they may well be punished for
it. These coaches, like Yakirovich, like Regis Labrie said, at Sunderland as well. Like, kind of came out of nowhere, but like, it might just be the right kind of the right people in the right positions.
Well, that's it. Like, Jakirovic came from somewhere over in Turkey, I believe. Like, Regis Lloris was reasonably well touted, I suppose. Or was he with Lorient before?
Yeah, and an underage nut, like an underage, like an expert in underage French football as well. Yeah. Just before we move on, I just saw Liam Scales talk about Maren O'Neill. Obviously, Celtic won the double at the weekend. Liam Scales is very keen for Maren O'Neill to stay on and be the Celtic manager. He says he absolutely loves playing for him.
Yeah.
And that's a very much, that's like a, it seems very much more common than not than when people like are describing. People love playing for Maren O'Neill. He said he fills him full of confidence and he enjoys being part of that team, and he really hopes he stays on. We don't know what's going to happen with Celtic. Obviously, Robbie Keane resigned from Ferencvaros as well last week, probably after we recorded as well. Yeah. So, interested to see where he ends up. I don't think he'll end up at Celtic.
I know he's linked with Slovan Bratislava, wasn't he?
Yeah, and I know Celtic have missed. Well, they haven't decided to go for who was the Motherwell manager last year, Jens Bertolaskio. He's gone to Toulouse. So, interesting to see what happened there.
There's
over the next few weeks.
Dominoes kind of falling.
Yeah.
It'd be very interesting to see how that all unfolds.
Yeah.
The final thing I wanted to mention was, of course, Keith Andrews, who's someone we've been revisiting and revisiting over the course of the last, well, however long we've been doing this, couple of months anyway. And his Brentford side were well touted to be relegated on that topic, like Hull were. He was well touted to be one of the first managers, if not the first manager, sacked. That didn't happen. They had a successful season all round. If you were to go back at the start of the season and say to Matthew Benham and the owners at Brentford that they would have a season like they've had, they probably would have taken it in terms of finishing ninth, 53 points, well clear of relegation.
And missing out in European football by goal difference.
And that's what I was going to come on to. So obviously, the goalposts do move. As far as seasons go, you know, you find yourself in positions and you have to take those opportunities when they come. Brentford, as you mentioned, have missed out on European football by virtue of goal difference.
Yeah.
Missed opportunity.
It is. Yeah. Like, if they had to win, they would have got into the Europa League. If they could somehow manage to, you know, manipulate themselves into the Conference League, I think that would have been better for them. That would have suited them more.
Absolutely.
Like, there is still a fair gap between, let's say, the Champions League, obviously, in the Europa League, and even in the Europa League and the Conference League. Conference League would have suited them to the, you know, suit them down to the ground, I think.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're playing Liverpool, who are the previous season's Premier League champions, on the last day, and you arguably should win the match, and you miss a header in the last minute to put yourself into European football, I think you can only be commended to Keith Andrews and all the coaching staff, Stephen Rice, and all the players
as well. But
when you say that about Matthew Benham and the Brentford owner about what the plans are for the club, they do expect to be competing for European football. Like, that is that is what's next on the Brentford kind of trajectory in their eyes. And
they have competed for European football.
Yeah, sorry, competed for European football, but obviously to play in it. But
play in Europe,
yeah.
I'm just looking, and it's not to take away, and I would want to end on a high note as far as Keith Andrews is concerned, because he's done a brilliant job. He has done a brilliant job. But if I take you back to the start of March, they played Bournemouth away, drew 0-0. Then they played Wolves at home, drew 2-2. They played Leeds away, they drew 0-0. They played Everton at home, drew 2-2. They played Fulham at home and they drew 0-0. All those draws are really what's... I mean, Bernd Leno making an absolutely outrageous save at the end of that game against Fulham. They then had a 2-1 loss away to Manchester United. They had a big win then against West Ham, of course. Well beaten by Manchester City.
They should have beaten Man United even at the time at Trafford.
Yeah, and then moving towards the end of the season in the last two games, 2-2 draw at home to a beached Palace, I suppose, and then a 1-1 draw away to Liverpool. So, yeah, they're probably
too many draws.
That's just what it is. Yeah, exactly.
And if they just, you know, turned some of those draws into wins, they would have been in the Bournemouth position.
Yeah, exactly.
They could have been going for Champions League football in the last day. But like, that's just the fine margins, especially in that middle pack of the Premier League, where it's super competitive,
and it's more competitive than it's ever been.
Yeah,
this season in particular, like you're looking between, you'd probably say Bournemouth there, who are sixth. You finished sixth with 57 points, 5 points between them and 11th placed Fulham.
Yeah.
So you've got like Chelsea, Brentford, Brighton, Sunderland all in the middle there, like so. And Liverpool were within that as well. So were Everton and Newcastle up until the last kind of end of the season, I suppose.
Yeah.
But anything else you want to get in before we wrap?
Yeah, I suppose we'll kind of go back full circle and we can just mention very lastly that Qatar, obviously, it will be here on Thursday night. Live commentary on Off the Ball with Stephen Doyle and Stewie Byrne. She's back.
Brilliant.
We are, 7 o'clock on Off the Ball on News Talk and the Go Loud app. It's 7:45 kickoff at the Aviva. Cats are managed by a famous World Cup story maker, Julen Lopetegui.
Is it? No way. Yeah. That was mad, that, wasn't it?
Yeah. So obviously he was the Spain manager, and then he was going to go, oh, I'm going to take the Real Madrid job. And then all of a sudden,
Fernando Hierro said, off you go, mate.
Off you go. Hasta luego.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's interesting. Like, Qatar are in Group B. And this is like, you know, the most kind of, this is where we are at a 48
team. This is the 48 team World Cup group of dreams.
Yeah. It's Qatar, it's Switzerland,
Bosnia.
It's Bosnia and Herzegovina, and it's Canada.
Mm. So we're going to be playing both teams that are in that group.
Yeah, it's not really like, oh, I can't wait to go up at 3 o'clock in the morning and watch Qatar and Bosnia.
I'll watch it.
We'll have an old World Cup daily podcast as well in your podcast feed for free.
So be sure to get your comments in next time. You've been very poor today. No comments, but we'll be back next week and you can do it. So just a reminder, as always, the Green Scene on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Hasta luego.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.